originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside my usual entry mate here on the program. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and extending a special welcome to everyone tuning in to Trainer Talk tonight on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201 and, of course, streaming us and podcasting us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you with us as we get started on another hour with a trainer who we have not spoken with before on this program and somebody who has a unique role in the sport of horse racing. Jude, it seems like each week we have had the privilege of talking with some of the top thoroughbred trainers, and by thoroughbreds, I mean flat trainers in the game. Now we get a chance to visit with one of the top steeplechase trainers that we have in the sport today, and really looking forward to the next hour.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and we had the privilege of touring his barn a couple of years ago. It was a lot of fun, and I love steeplechase racing. It's a great sport, and it's kind of the roots of the flat racing here in the United States. So I'm looking forward to this.
Well, he's good friends with Sean Clancy. We'll try not to hold that against him as we move throughout the hour here today.
Hey, I'm good friends with Sean Clancy.
I think we all are. Well, tonight's guest is, again, one of the top steeplechase trainers that the sport has. He has just celebrated his 50th birthday this year on May 1st, and he has been on a roll. He's trained 133 winners in his career with more than $4 million in purse earnings, and included among those are 133 victories are 10 greatest stakes wins, 7 of those being grade ones.
Yeah, and there's not that many grade ones in that sport, so it's a fantastic accomplishment, and he certainly knows his way around the fences.
Well, without further ado, we welcome in Richard Valentine to the program here tonight. Richard, welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to the visit and hearing your story. Boy, I mentioned those 7 grade one wins, and of course that brings us immediately to a big horse by the name of Demonstrative, who was the Eclipse Champion steeplechase horse in 2014. What a ride he was able to take you on.
Yeah, we had a hell of a lot of fun with him. Mrs. Orstrom and I went to places that we didn't think we would go. I picked him out as a 3-year-old at the Tattersall Sales in Newmarket, and really didn't envision that he would take us on the journey that he did.
When you go to a sale and you're looking for a prospect, what are some of the things that you're looking for a steeplechase horse?
But when I go to Europe, basically I look at the distance that they're running. I think horses that run and have winning form going a mile to a mile and a quarter are better suited for us. A mile and a half, a mile and three quarters, which they write many races over there, I find that it just might be a tad too slow, but certainly there have been horses that have come over and done very well. But that's the formula I stick to. And physically, I look for a horse that I think will stay sound on our turf, our firm turf, and that can carry weights upwards to 150, 155, and sometimes even more than that. So that's generally what I look for. Physically, a big, strong horse that's not over heavy and that's quick enough to run on our fast ground.
Yeah, I imagine, like, racing at Saratoga, for instance, you have to deal with the same things that a flat trainer would deal with, the tighter turns and all of that. But you also have to have a horse that can carry, you know, sometimes 145 or 150 pounds.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we're looking at 3 and 4 year olds generally. So hopefully they're done growing. Although, you know, they can certainly grow from 4 to 5, but, you know, I feel that they're mature at that age, 4 years old, and, they can carry that extra weight.
Richard, are there any similarities to the physical makeup of a good steeplechase horse and those parameters that you just outlined and similarities to a good flat horse too? I mean, are the physical makeup similar or do they have to be completely different?
I think they're very similar. I look for a nice walk, a big overstep, a horse that sort of swings his tail, and they have to be correct. I think sometimes some flat horses tend to be a bit smaller, but generally, you know, we're looking at the same type of horse.
What makes a good jumper?
You know, I think more importantly, that, you know, a good hind leg, a good hind quarter, and mentally a horse that, takes to it. It's a very different thing to teach him how to jump. And I've only been around a couple that just did not like it. It really sort of changes it up for them. It's not your regular routine going out to the track and galloping a mile and a half. We take them to the ring, the show ring, and we put show jumping poles on the ground and teach them to trot over those. And then we gradually, you know, we'll put the poles up on standards. And then we go cross country, which it's incredible how the horses really take to it. Going cross country, it's something completely different for them. And I think they really enjoy it. And I tend to do that for a bit, and then I'll introduce them to the hurdles. But all in all, I think they really enjoy it because it's a change from their normal routine.
Well, you're going to be heading up to Saratoga, and from the sounds of it, it sounds like you're already on your way to Saratoga Springs, New York.
I am. Yeah. I'm waiting for the weather report.
Well, the reason you're going is because you have a horse by the name of Personal Start in tomorrow's Grade 1 A.P. Smithwick Memorial. That is a steeplechase at the Spa. And a horse that started on the flats was just 1 for 8 on the flats. But now he comes into this race with 3 consecutive victories, including that Grade 2 win last time out.
Yeah. It's a step up for him, but he certainly handled his last race. He won very nicely. I think he's suited by the racetrack. And, you know, it's a handicap. He gets a nice weight, and I figured we might as well take a shot.
Yeah, well, those races don't come up that often, especially the ones at Saratoga. They only give you 1 day a week usually. So you got to take advantage of every opportunity.
Yeah, and the purse structure up there is just incredible. So if you have something that can be competitive, you've got to take a shot to run up there.
Richard, what's been the key to getting Personal Start on track and on this winning streak?
You know, I think, you know, there's the way horses want to run and the way we want them to run. As a young horse, he was very aggressive. His first start, he actually tripped up on landing and went down. He was very, very aggressive. And after that run, we tried to drop him in and just get him to settle. Now with maturity, we've let him run the way he wants to. And probably I should have done that a while ago.
He's kind of a free-running type of horse, huh?
He is. But you know what? Now, now he will settle. He can be a bit tactical. The last day, he was running against Balance the Budget, who is a confirmed front runner, and we were able to sit off of him, and the horse was very willing to do that. He wasn't fighting his rider, and I think tomorrow Iranistan and the English horse, they, you know, can be fairly close. So I'm confident we can place him wherever we want, but he wants to be forwardly placed.
Yeah, and this race is at a distance of 2 1/16 miles. And I'm going to ask you a question right now that's going to make our good friend Sean Clancy cringe. But how many jumps is that, Richard?
What's that? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
How many jumps is that?
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 jumps.
Oh, now I don't feel too bad. He had to count them out in his head, too.
Yeah.
Well, Richard Valentine, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Richard, one of the top steeplechase trainers in the game today. We're going to talk more about his champion Demonstrative later in the program, so make sure you stick with us here. Richard, you didn't come from a horse racing family, so where did this love of racing begin for you?
Apparently, I was to lunch in Philadelphia when I was very young with a great aunt, and there was a police horse. I don't remember. Apparently, I went bananas over the horse, and my great aunt gave me riding lessons for, I think it was like my third birthday. Actually, I was terrified of horses when I rode them, and that's kind of how it got started. And then we moved to Unionville, Pennsylvania, and that's just real horse country, and was able to meet some wonderful people, a man called George Osborne, who his daughters had ponies, but they weren't very interested. And I was able to ride their ponies, then went fox hunting. And with that, steeplechasing was a big part of the Unionville and the horse country there. And that's kind of how I got going.
Have you ever been tempted to train some flat horses as well?
I actually have one in training now. I've trained a handful. My first winner on the flat actually was at Saratoga. Johnny Velasquez rode him. It was a New York bred race going 1 5/8. It was a horse that we had run over jumps, and it seemed to be a good spot. I was terrified to get a rider. I spoke to a friend of mine, Lizzie Merriman, and she said, your horse fits this race. Start at the top and work your way down. So I called Angel Cordero and felt like a complete fool. And he asked the horse's name, and he said he'd get back to me, and then Johnny rode him. So that was pretty incredible.
That's great.
So that, and I've won a few races on the flat. I would like to start training more. It's something that I think would be very helpful to get clients.
Well, and not only that, you have had so much success on the steeplechase side. I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, that getting into training flat horses would be somewhat of a new challenge for you. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it is a challenge. And particularly I train on the farm. We're lucky to have the Middleburg Training Center right down the road, and Laurel Racecourse is only about an hour and a half from us. So for fast pieces of work or gate work, I have access to those two places. But I think training up a hill, it sort of takes the speed out of them, so they definitely need to go to the track to run on the flat. And even the jumping horses that run at the flat tracks, you have to put a little bit more speed into them. So in that respect, we have the best of both worlds. And I think a flat horse would probably enjoy being training off the farm, you know. But it's something we want to do, and we hope to get more flat horses in the future.
you know, when you're in the steeplechase game, you're traveling so much, you're all over the place. So you don't think anything of putting a horse in the trailer and going wherever you need to go. So your situation is really pretty cool since you're so close to Laurel. And your barn, when you step into your barn, you know you're in the barn of a top trainer because it's just absolutely beautiful. I mean, impeccably clean and really, really a very comforting place to be, I found it.
Well, thank you. My position is I work for the Orstrom family. I am the resident trainer there. It's their place, and they like it neat and tidy. It's a beautiful farm, and I think my guys take a lot of pride in the way the horses look and the upkeep of the place, you know.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about their operation, Richard, and what's allowed them to be so successful.
Initially, I came down to be Mr. Orstrom's private trainer. He was more interested in timber racing, which is another part of the jump racing. It's over solid fences. His main focus was the Maryland Hunt Cup. That's what he wanted. But he did have some flat horses. He had a good filly with Rick Schatzberg called Moss Flower. He had a string of horses in France, some very good horses in France. Mainly they were bred in America, sent to France, and anything that he thought would be a jumper would come back. When he passed away, his son, Clark Orstrom, sort of took over. And, basically Clark said he wouldn't have the numbers that his father had, but they always envisioned horses being trained at Whitewood. And if we could fiscally make it reasonable, you know, viable for them to keep it going, they would, and we've been very lucky since then.
Well, you think about the Maryland Hunt Cup, and that event is so special. What is it about that particular race, Richard, and for people that aren't as familiar with it, what is it about that race that makes it so unique?
Well, first of all, it's a demanding race. It's 4 miles, fences up to five feet. It's a demanding course, but the time it goes in to make a Hunt Cup horse, you have to have an owner that is willing to be patient, and it takes a good 3-4 years to get a horse to the Hunt Cup, and I think in that fact that you get the real diehard owners, and it's the Hunt Cup. A Hunt Cup owner is so different than anybody else. They wake up after the Hunt Cup is run the day after, and they think about next year. And the buzz when you get there, for me, it's terrifying because I'm nervous as heck. but it's one race that goes off at 4 o'clock, and the atmosphere is nothing I can explain. It's like no other race meet. And to win it is just, it's a dream, and it takes a few days to sink in afterwards.
Yeah, I read an article as I was getting ready for the program about your win in the 2009 Maryland Hunt Cup with Michelle Marieschi. That's a race contested over 22 fences, and you became the first Virginia trainer to win that race since 1937. That had to be an unbelievable day for you.
Yeah, it was. And, it was sort of bittersweet because he was a horse that Mr. Orstrom owned. And when he passed away, we went through the horses, and Michelle Marieschi could never really put a string of races together. He had niggling problems, so we thought he'd be better suited for the point-to-points, which are sort of unrecognized steeplechase races, lesser quality of horses, but an easier, the pressure's not on him as much, and he was bought by an amateur rider who left him with us, and sure enough, he ended up going to the Hunt Cup and winning it, so it was sort of, I would have loved to have done it for Mr. Orstrom, but it was terrific all the same to have the horse trained at Whitewood and bringing it back to Virginia.
Yeah, well, that's a great story, and at least he was the breeder of a Hunt Cup winner.
Yeah, actually, he didn't breed that one.
Oh. It gets worse.
That makes it worse. I bought him as well at Tattersall's as a 3-year-old, but it was hard to call Mrs. Orstrom and say, he won the Hunt Cup, because she went to watch another horse that she owned run, and unfortunately he pulled up on the day. So it was a tough call, but she was delighted for everybody involved.
Yeah, I'm glad that you pronounced his name too. Michelle Marishi, the proper pronunciation of that 2009 Maryland Hunt Cup victor for our guest tonight, Richard Valentine. Richard, the other part of that story that I loved was the jockey, George Hunt Jr., a former bond trader. He quit the white-collar world about 4 years prior to that to compete in timber races. And when he's not riding, he was actually working as a stonemason. And he said after the race that he was so excited, he said, "My mother is doing an Irish jig up in heaven right now." I thought that was a great quote.
Yeah. George approached a friend of mine, Joe Cassidy, and said that's what he wanted to do. And most people would say, "You're crazy," but Joe loves a challenge, and he told him that it was a financial commitment. It would take 4 to 5 years. Told him how much money he would have to spend, how many horses he would have to have in the stable, and fair play to George. He did it. You know, he went out and bought some suitable horses, and he had very good luck.
Yeah, let's face it. Don't you think that all of these steeplechase jockeys have to have a screw loose to jump over those fences and put themselves in that situation?
I'll tell you what, I think they do. I rode a couple races, and as I was going along, I felt like I was in an old movie where the rider's just stationary and the camera, you know, the scenery's going behind him. It was just, I felt like it was bizarre, and I thought, you know what, I really don't enjoy this. I'll watch other people do it.
Well, it must have been hard for old George to get mounts when they found out he had the hands of a stonemason.
That's why he was an owner rider.
That's great.
Well, it's a special.
And you know, and George grew up fox hunting and eventing. He had been away from it for a while, but. And he was a certain age. He was not going to get outside rides. So he went and built up a stable and set a goal, and, you know, he accomplished it.
He must have been a hell of a stockbroker, too.
Yeah.
Richard, when you think back to some of the people that have helped you get to where you are today, what are some of the names that come to mind?
I mean, there are so many, and I think that's what's great about the horse industry. If you have an interest and you're willing to learn, people will take the time and give you advice. I first with George Osborne, who got me going. Then I actually worked for Patty Miller at EQB in the early days of that, and I was terrified of her, but I learned a lot. From there, I did a little bit of showing, eventing, but I went to work for Mouse Morris, Michael Morris in Ireland. He was the leading jump trainer. I learned a hell of a lot from him, but I would come back in the summers and work for Mrs. Fanning, who was an extraordinary Hunt Cup trainer. She just wanted Hunt Cup horses. But I would say that the person I learned the most was the person that set me up with the job with the Orstroms was a woman called Betty Bird. Mrs. Bird, she was incredible what she could do with the horse. And she trained, she was the first woman to train a Maryland Hunt Cup winner. She rode show hunters. She trained flat horses. She used to go up to New York back in the day when they ran jump races at Belmont and Saratoga. But she taught me so much about how to get a horse fit and keeping them happy and feeding. You know, she was a legend. And yeah, I'd say she was the most influential in my career.
It's a lot different to how to make a living in your business as opposed to being a public trainer, for the flats. Obviously, the owners are very passionate about your game, and money seems to be no object for most of them. How does that work? I mean, does that make it more difficult, or you know, is it nice having like a private job type of thing?
It is, but and then there's money that they spend on horses. It's pretty different. I don't come from a lot of money, so I kind of, when I look at the expenses, I start panicking. And but they're used to it. I think I'd be silly to get complacent and think that money is no object, because most of the people I train for, you know, they go over their bills and they ask questions. It's not just an open checkbook, you know. But in saying that, they realize that because we travel every weekend, you're paying for a horse, you're paying for the groom's accommodation when they're on the road, you're paying part of the jockey's expenses. It adds up. So I'm lucky to have those people that are passionate about it and don't mind the added expenses.
We are visiting with trainer Richard Valentine, one of the top steeplechase trainers in the sport today. We're going to continue this visit in the second half of the program. Don't forget, if you did miss any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our shows. It's horseracingradio.net. I'm Mike Penna alongside Jude Feld. We're back with Richard Valentine right after this on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. On November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Fasig Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at FasigNovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Millridge has a long history of raising and selling racehorses. Future Millridge stallion Oscar Performance broke a 20-year-old track record, winning the Grade 3 Poker at a mile on the turf at Belmont Park. This year's Millridge consignment at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale offers three quality yearling fillies by top sires Carpe Diem, Tappet, and Curlin. Since 2005, Millridge has sold 58 yearlings at Saratoga, with 74% winners, 5% Grade 1 or Grade 2 winners. Stop by Barn 5 for inspection. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Bakari Bloodstock is consistently among the top consigners at major sales. Recent stars include Grade 1 winner Salty.
Here comes Salty down inside to grab the lead, and Salty has won it.
Bakari Bloodstock is offering four selected yearlings at this year's Phasic Tipton Saratoga sale by top sires Pioneer of the Nile, Bernardini, Honor Code, and Curlin, with hip number 161, a half-brother to Grade 2 winner Appealing Tail. Visit Bakari Bloodstock in Barn 2 at Phasic Tipton Saratoga.
Discover the difference with Hidden Brook Racing Partnerships. With 83% winners, 17% stakes winners, and 17% graded stakes runners from horses purchased, Hidden Brook partners have enjoyed success at the highest levels. From modest opportunities, Hidden Brook has campaigned a champion, 8 stakes winners, 3 graded stakes winners, and 8 graded stakes horses. In 2018, the partnerships have achieved 29% wins, with 46% of their starters finishing in the money. Discover the difference by visiting HiddenBrookFarmKY.com. Talking with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, do the strips help with EIPH?
Essentially, all horses that work hard are vulnerable to EIPH. As with any elite athlete, we are pushing performance horses to their physiological limits. And when we do, things can break. In this case, blood vessels in the lungs. Nothing stops EIPH. Only two things have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH: Flair strips and Lasix. Alone or with Lasix, Flair strips protect horses from EIPH.
Learn more at flairstrips.com/learn. Denali Stud, led by 2015 Farm Manager of the Year Gary Bush, and Donnie Snellings, regarded as one of the best yearling managers in Kentucky. In recent years, Denali has raised Grade 1 standouts Animal Kingdom, Taprit, Her Eminency, and Hawkish, while consigning Grade 1 winners Constellation, V.E. Day, and Bolt Doro. Consistently a top 5 consigner, Denali has sold a $1 million horse at the Saratoga sale 3 years running, and the sale topper in 2 of those years. Denali Stud, a proud tradition of attention to detail and raising and selling Saturday afternoon horses.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton, Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us as we continue this hour-long visit with trainer Richard Valentine, talking about the world of steeplechase racing, which is a bit different than what we've done in past programs. This is the first show where we have actually interviewed a steeplechase trainer. And Richard, as you heard in the first half of the program, not only a steeplechase trainer, he has saddled flat horses and he's saddled winners of flat races, but has made his name training those steeplechase runners. And happy to have you back with us here in the second half of the program. Richard, we were talking during the commercial break and Jude brought this up, that, you know, the care that the steeplechase horses receive, and Jude and I talk about this a lot on the flat racing side of things, the care that these horses receive is second to none. And a lot of people will look at the steeplechase racing and the spills and everything that happens over the jumps and say, wait a minute, this sport is too dangerous. And nothing could be further from the truth, right?
Yeah, it is. They're obviously jumping at racing speed, but we put a lot of time and into them jumping, and it's a natural, not that it's a gait, but it's a natural thing for horses to jump. They take to it very quickly. There is the odd chance that they don't, but, you know, these horses, they get turned out on grass paddocks. They train in a farm atmosphere. We cater for them 23 hours a day, you know, and probably 22 hours a day, but the 2 hours they're out and turned out a day is their time. But it's a big investment for us. And for me, the safety aspect for the rider and the horse is most important. That's why we spend so much time teaching them to jump properly and educating them from the very beginning. You know, we tend to ride them a little bit longer than a flat person, a flat exercise rider would. We teach them to learn how to move away from their leg, your leg, It's a different type of riding, but we're teaching them how the rider can assist them in the approach to a fence, and it's not just we put something in front of them and blast them down. It's a process that we all take very seriously, and I love it. I particularly love it when we get a flat horse that comes back. They're a little bit nervous and they can't figure it out. We go out hacking, and you know they learn to drop their heads and have a pick of grass along the way, and you can just see them decompress, and that's a great part of it for me, because that proves to me that they're enjoying it, and if they enjoy it, I enjoy it.
It's so much more of a natural type life for a horse. They get to spend more time outside. They get to go kind of at their own pace. It's not all about speed. It's about stamina and fitness and athletic ability. So it's really more natural for a steeplechase horse as far as life is concerned.
It's so nice for them to just not be, at the racetrack. Not to say that they don't do a good job at the racetrack, but it's just so unique the way we do it, because most of us train off of the farm, and horses get to be horses.
Richard, for a horse that has never jumped over fences before, what's the key to training them to do so?
I think giving them a very good experience and keeping it as simple as possible on the ground, raising the fences with their comfort zone, not overfacing them, and not overdoing it. Do small sessions of jumping, short sessions frequently versus long sessions infrequently.
Well, interesting stuff. Richard Valentine with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Richard, when you talk about a horse that was proficient over the jumps, the name Demonstrative comes to mind, and proficient, probably even not the right word. I'm sure that's an understatement in your book. This horse was so brilliant. He won multiple Grade 1 races in his career, and he was voted the 2014 Eclipse Champion Steeplechase Horse. Tell us the Demonstrative story.
But I went over to the sales, the July sales in Tattersall, which can be sort of a boutique-type sale because it's over the July Cup meeting. I looked at him, loved him, but, I was looking at pedigrees that maybe the other Americans that were there at the time, Dynaformer was the craze. I hadn't seen an elusive quality running over jumps, and I loved that he was out of a Quiet American mare, and physically, I'm very lucky. We valued him. We thought we'd probably have to spend $40,000 to $50,000 on him. But he was one of the last horses to go through in the morning session, and it was the first day of the Darley Stallion Parade, so they have a massive big lunch, and a lot of people go there, and there was afternoon racing. And he came through the ring, and we bought him for $25,000. And I think we got lucky there. he shipped back to America, and we just started jumping him. And within 10 days, he was schooling over the hurdles, and I remember saying to a girl that worked for us at the time that, oh, he'll be schooling up sides by the end of the week. And we all laughed, and sure enough, he did. It was not my intention to run him in October of his three-year-old year, but he just took to it so quickly. And anyway, he ran at Middleburg, and he won, and the story started there.
Well, he would go on to win 7 Grade 1 races in that brilliant career, earning $971,000 in purses. And as we told you earlier, voted the Eclipse Champion Steeplechase Horse of 2014. Richard, when you think about his first Grade 1 win in the New York Turf Riders Cup at Saratoga, August 23rd, 2012, what comes to mind when you think about that day?
What I remember most is the flight home. Mrs. Orstrom and I were just sort of in shock, and we were kind of stunned at how easily he had done it. And being Saratoga, the Turf Riders has so much history, and being a Grade One, we didn't say a lot on the way home. We just kept looking at each other and saying, can you believe that happened? And that was the beginning of lots of drives and flights home.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a special day. And that shock factor of actually breaking through in a Grade One, we've heard other trainers talk about that here on the program. It's something that it takes you a little while to kind of let it sink in, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, there's no feeling like winning a race and winning a Grade One, your first Grade One with the horse that you produced. I couldn't explain it. And I was just so proud of the horse, the way he did it. He had won the novice race, the Jonathan Kaiser. He was a 5-year-old. We sent him to his Grade One, and, you know, he answered all the questions.
Well, he went on to have a magnificent career, and that was just the start. I mean, so many memories that horse has given you, and of course, lots of chrome as well.
Yeah. It was incredible. You know, we did have a hiccup. He sort of lost his form. We put a dynamic scope on him. He was paralyzed or starting to get paralyzed on one side, you know, doing tieback operations are very risky. We sent him to Cornell, and he came back, and he's an incredible horse. He still is. I ride him out every day. Just a lot of fun, and we're very lucky.
Well, you know, he won that first Grade One, the New York Turf Riders Cup in 2012. He would come back 2 years later in 2014, that Eclipse season, after losing his form. You get him back to the races. He comes back and wins that race for a second time 2 years later. Tell me about that day and what that meant.
All right, it was incredible because, you know, bringing him back from those wind surgeries, it was just a relief that he was back to form. His run at Iroquois the time before, the race before, I just didn't have him fit enough. And we really, you know, we concentrated on getting him to Saratoga. And it was just, it showed what kind of horse he was. It was almost better than the first one because we sort of had written him off and everybody had. So for him to regain his form was just incredible.
Because your horses run such a long distance, you can't get them fit, you know, in a couple of weeks. What's the process involved in that, and how long does it take from race to race to get the horse where you want him to be?
Well, generally, so what we'll do is the 1st of January, the new season, we'll trot a few miles. We're lucky to have a lot of dirt roads around Whitewood. We also have a trotting machine, a walker that they can trot on. We have a treadmill. I tend to do about 4 weeks of that sort of trotting on the walker or the treadmill to get a base of fitness. And then at the farm, we basically interval train. Our gallop, the longest part of our gallop is a mile and a tenth up a hill. But we have different variations off of it. So we'll work up their gallops so they're going twice up the long gallop, and then they'll start breezing. And generally their breezing is like the way we start galloping, and not unlike the flat horses, we start with a shorter distance at a not so fast pace, and then we lengthen the distances and increase the pace.
Talking with trainer Richard Valentine here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Richard, what's the longest steeplechase race that you'll run throughout the season? Well, not you, but your horses.
The Maryland Hunt Cup is 4 miles. The Virginia Gold Cup is 4 miles for timber horses. The hurdle horses, the Far Hills race is 2 5/8, and the Iroquois is 3 miles. And that they're both grade ones, and it, 3 miles for a hurdle horse is pretty demanding. So you really want them to have that, be as fit as possible, and those long, slow, starting long and slow, trotting and building them up, it's crucial because they really draw on the reserve. Particularly in the Iroquois, they finish uphill that last half mile. They really need to have the fitness.
Is there a lot of difference between a horse that runs 2.5 miles and one that runs 3 miles?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some horses just can't get the trip. But I don't think that if your horse is getting 2.5 miles, they're likely to get 3 miles. It's the horses like, you know, tomorrow's distance, 2 1/16, but the AP Smithwick, it's, you know, pretty sharp 2 miles around there. And some horses just won't train on and get 3 miles. So it's nice that we have varied distance for them, distances to try with them.
You know, Richard, when you think about the fact that so many steeplechase trainers have been successful with training flat horses too. You think about names like Tom Voss and Jonathan Shepherd. They both train their fair share of flat winners. You said that you've been there. You've trained some as well. Why do you think that transitions so nicely from the steeplechase game to the flat racing on the training side of things?
Well, you know, I think a lot, to me, I love, you know, training up a hill, it's like resistance training. You can get them fitter without putting a lot of pressure on them. And sometimes, you know, those horses that are quirky on the training at the track just excel at the farm. I mean, Jonathan Shepherd and Tom Voss, they just wizards. And if I could be a quarter as good as they are, I'd be doing well. But I think they both, you know, they both are incredible. You know, Tom was an incredible horseman. And, you know, Jonathan's just, you know, he speaks, his record speaks for itself. But I think we spend a bit more time with them and try to figure them out, you know, and probably don't have the pressure that a public trainer on the flat would have to come up with the results and keep it going.
Will you ever spend any time watching what trainers like Jonathan Shepherd and Tom Voss are doing with their horses and say, okay, maybe take something away from that you can incorporate into your operation?
Yeah, you know, I spend the winter in Camden, South Carolina, and Shepherd has horses there. And I definitely take notice to what he's doing. Early in my training career, I would go down there and forgetting that he had horses prepping for Gulfstream. And I'd think, oh, God, Jonathan's working those horses so fast and it's February. But, you know, they were shipping to Florida. But, yeah, I think someone once told me you can never stop learning. You know, and watch, listen, absorb everything like a sponge, and you can learn something from anybody.
Yeah, it's important to do that, to observe and see what other people are doing. Not necessarily because you want to do what they're doing, but just to know what goes through other people's minds when they have a horse and the way they approach the game, I think sometimes it gives you insight into how their horses are going to run and things you may want to do, things you may not want to do.
Exactly. And, you know, I always say it's not an exact science. If it was, we'd all be training at the same percentage. You know, what works for one trainer doesn't work for another. And I think you can learn. You know, I watch eventing, show jumping. I watch as much flat racing as I can. You just have to learn and improve yourself.
For those of you just tuning in to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, we are visiting with trainer Richard Valentine, one of the top steeplechase trainers in the game today. He is on his way to Saratoga from his base in Virginia, actually driving as we are doing this interview for you here tonight. He is driving there to saddle Personal Start in tomorrow's Grade 1 AP Smithwick Memorial, a horse that is entering that race on a 3-race winning streak. As you just heard in the second half of the show, Richard has been at the top of the game. He trained Demonstrative, who is the Eclipse champion of 2014 on the steeplechase side of things. Richard, outside of horses like Demonstrative and even maybe Personal Start for that matter, who are some of the other horses, when you think back on your career, that are always going to hold a special place in your heart?
You know, Michelle Mariucci, my first Hunt Cup winner, Professor Maxwell, he won the Hunt Cup for us the second time. Those horses you just have so – I'm in awe of that they can run 4 miles and jump those big fences. Another filly I trained called Kisser and Run, she was a $25,000 claimer on the flat, and, she won close to $220,000 over jumps, and first horse I placed in a Grade One, Mauritania, who was a homebred of Mr. Orstrom's, then I have some that I'm always rooting for the underdog, and sometimes to win a maiden claimer with a horse that people said you wouldn't is equally as rewarding.
Yeah, who's a horse that nobody knows about that you did your best training job with?
I would have to say Mauritania. He was really rank and hard to train. And we talked about watching what other trainers do in Camden. Janet Elliott. There's these stand-up pine trees, and she just used to canter these tough horses in circles and figure eights and get them to change their leads, and you could see them just sort of drop it, and then she'd open up the circle. And that's what we had to do with him, because he was just a dead runaway. And he got to the point where, he would gallop in behind, and it was rewarding. He was a tough horse.
How about Understood, Richard? What did that horse mean to your career?
Well, he was, he had been placed in listed races in France. He came over, he ran in, I think, the Laurel Turf Cup, and then he came to the farm, and we were going to run him over jumps, and Clark Orstrom asked me to speak to his father about keeping the horse in training on the flat, because, he was useful. And so he went to Rick Schlossberg. I think he placed in the Red Smith and the Knickerbocker. But he was the first proper horse I had that I felt like I could go places with. I wish I had him now. I mean, I was so green then. I made mistakes. But he was my first proper big horse, and it was a pleasure to train.
Yeah, and won that Grade 3 back in 2005 for you, that first graded stakes victory in what has become an outstanding career for our guest, Richard Valentine. Richard, what take us inside your house here. What is it, just cluttered with trophies and memorabilia? Is there a Demonstrative room? I mean, what's it look like?
You know what? I have a lot... the kitchen is just win pictures. There's a lot of demonstrative. I own a home in Camden, and the mudroom is the demonstrative room because I've been very fortunate to have a lot of photos and a lot of trophies.
That's really cool. And, you know, another cool thing you mentioned kind of in passing was that you ride demonstrative out every day. How cool is that to have a horse that meant so much to you still around the barn and hanging out?
He loves it. You know, today we were going out, and, you know, I was sort of in a rush to get on the road, and he was running around the paddock, and I had to tell the boys to bring him in because he was going to upset all the young horses that were out. but he loves it. I think he thinks he's in training because he's going up to the gallop. He does this Zenyatta walk. I've only been around a couple horses that do it where he, like, slams his front feet out and he sort of sinks back and, you know, he looks like he's dancing. And he does it the whole way down the hill from the gallop. It's great to see a horse that has no blemishes from racing. He's retired and he just loves life, you know.
Richard, he retired with $971,000 in career earnings. Has there, over the past couple of years, has there been any temptation at all to bring him back for that one more win just to get those earnings up over the $1 million mark?
Well, that's what I, you know, when he, that's all we were trying to do. And his last run in Saratoga, before that run, we had thought about putting blinkers on him. And I just thought, not that, I just thought it was a cheap move on my part to just trying to squeeze some more money out of him to get to that milestone. In hindsight, I wish I would have said to Mrs. Orstrom, let's just give him 6 months off. We won't make a decision. We'll bring him back and see how he is. Because I think he enjoyed it. He just, you know, he ran 7 years in a row and he went to a lot of places, and maybe he just sort of soured on it. But anyway, I have no regrets. But yeah, I've thought about it, but very briefly. I'd hate for anything to happen.
Yeah, I think you did the right thing. And in today's day and age now, it seems like everybody's a millionaire anyway. I mean, his career is stand yeah. alone, you know. So, yeah, it's great that you get to ride him and that he has a nice life.
Yeah, and Laird George, who works, you know, I shouldn't call him my assistant because he's very much a decision maker as I am. He fox hunts him, and, you know, he's the big horse. He's in the number one stall. He will be for as long as we have him.
Well, Richard, I have to tell you, we're getting ready to wrap things up here. Only about a minute and a half left, but I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift from one of our sponsors, that is Flair Equine Nasal Strips, so we'll get those over to you. And all the best tomorrow in the AP Smithwick, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you all talking to me about steeplechasing. It's a sport I love, and I hope more people would get interested in it.
Yeah. Keep it rolling.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard.
Richard Valentine here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. And, Jude, you're 100% right. When he talked about demonstrative, and I asked him that question about the temptation to bring him back just to get the earnings up, and you said, I think you did the exact right thing, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, what else does a horse need to do? He did everything. He's a kingpin in that sport, and, you know, $35,000 isn't going to make a difference.
No, and even he said, you know, to put blinkers on him, to bring him back for that one more start, I just felt like I was unnecessarily trying to squeeze a few more dollars out of him, which is not fair to the horse.
Yeah, well, and, you know, you would expect Richard to the kind of operation he runs, he's not going to squeeze.
No, smart guy, and he falls right in line with guys like Jonathan Shepard and Graham Motion and all the great patient grass trainers that we've seen over the years.
Absolutely.
Yeah, tremendous. All right, our thanks to Richard for being with us here tonight. If you missed any portion, head to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our trainer talk shows, horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.